Welcome to the Farzi Show, everybody. My name is Mark Farzetta. This is the Farzi Show, presented by Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jeweler. Hey, here's something we don't get to see often. The NFL nailed it.
What?
Yeah, Super Bowl opening night. They crushed it. Now, I've only physically been to one of them, but I've watched many of them, and that's the best one I've ever seen. Presentation, Sal Powell making an appearance. Did you see that? I've never seen both quarterbacks occupy the stage the way they did last night with Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts. And then on the other side, they had Brandon Graham was up there. Chris Jones was up there. That was a nice little thing that the NFL did. That was pretty entertaining. Good job, NFL. Cutting in is a normal thing where you see the guys do the press conferences and they're answering all sorts of weird questions. I saw Jason Kelce and Travis Kelce both get asked to put a sombrero on. A number of guys got asked to put a sombrero on and do that. That was great. You got reaction from Darius Slay talking about Brandon Ayuk, the gentleman we spoke about yesterday who said this Eagles team, they ain't real. They ain't real. This pass defense ain't anything. Well, Darius Slay kind of took care of that and just said, I'm sorry, what? Yeah, okay. You're home. Basically, is the way that conversation went. You're home, and we're at the Super Bowl. That's how that went down. You know what? I don't know. Maybe I don't think I'm alone here, but I think Cooper Manning is pretty damn entertaining. That's who I think. I think he's pretty entertaining. But we'll get into some of the comments from last night. And I noticed myself, like, every time Andy Reid was on stage, I was not the biggest Andy Reid fan when he was here in Philadelphia. The accountability thing definitely ate away at me. Not able to win the big game ate away at me, of course, as it did for a lot of people. That's not breaking news for anybody. But I think if the Eagles didn't win the Super Bowl 5 years ago, I wouldn't be looking at Andy Reid the way I do now. I can't say that I was ever an Andy Reid hater. It was more of a realist, I always felt. I was always more of a realist when it came to Andy Reid's time here in Philadelphia, being someone that lived through it, and a lot of you did as well. Most of you did as well. Like the entire era I'm talking about. But when it comes to his time, it all ended in failure. People talk about the great success that he was here. And yes, in terms of sustained success, he was the most successful Eagles head coach. No doubt about that. He's on his way to the Hall of Fame. They were talking about it a lot last night, how he is the only coach to have 100 wins with two different teams. It's pretty remarkable. It's pretty incredible. When you think about how every season ultimately ended in a disappointment, it kind of eats away. It kind of is troublesome for a fan base of what could have been if they would have hustled up in the last 5 minutes of that Super Bowl, even though I put those last 5 minutes more so on Donovan than I do the head coach. But all the other years that were there, the power he had in the front office, getting Donovan more help and all that, I look at it and I would look back on it with a lot of angst. I'd look back on it with frustration. But with the Eagles winning, I look at Andy Reid and I go, instead of going, there's Andy, I go, there's Andy. You know, my opinion of Andy Reid, I think, has softened with the Eagles winning. Because I no longer look at him as the guy that, oh, man, he almost got it. He came the closest many times of any coach that we've ever had in Philadelphia. But he didn't deliver. Doug Peterson came and he delivered. And we finally had that great prize. And in a very, very different way, but in one tiny way similar. I remember when the Boston Red Sox won the World Series. I remember people walking around with a banner that said, Bill Buckner, we forgive you. And I'm like, well, damn, these guys. How long ago was that? Come on, you know? But the point was, the fans finally had what they had longed for so long. They finally had that World Series. When the Eagles won the Super Bowl, we finally had what we longed for. We finally had that Super Bowl. We finally had that parade. And I noticed last night in watching the festivities that when I saw Andy, it was like, there's Andy. It wasn't like, there's Andy. That's changed for me ever since the Super Bowl. Hey, call me ungrateful, but I know I'm not alone in that room of ungrateful people that look back on that time. And yes, it was the most successful, sustained run the Eagles ever had. And without that, you probably don't have this. Without building that over there or that foundation, you don't have this beautiful building over here. You know, that kind of thing. And that's fine. And that's true. But when it comes to ultimately delivering the prize, the fact that we finally got it makes me look back on the Andy Reid era with not as much frustration or anger. It's still there. for what could have been, what you got close to. But now that we actually have it, and now that you're actually back in it, oh my goodness. It definitely feels a little bit different. I don't think I'm alone in that either. Not to say you didn't enjoy the era any less, or not to say that you like hate Andy Reid or anything like that. Just that right now, looking back on it, I don't have to look back at as much frustration because we finally got to enjoy what we were always meant to enjoy, a Super Bowl championship, and maybe just another one knocking on the door. Our guest today, Ray Dininger, will join the show. Ray has got all sorts of things going on. I wonder, because you know, people made a big deal. Ray tells the story of how he came out of retirement, I guess is what we'll call it. And I wonder if Ray will, after the season's over, after the Super Bowl, I wonder if Ray will find a beach somewhere like Tom Brady. Maybe Tom Brady was, where was he? South Beach? Where the hell was Tom? Maybe Ray will go to like Wildwood Crest. Maybe he'll just sit on the beach there and he'll be like, yep, you only get one sappy retirement speech, so I'm just retiring now. Maybe Ray will do that for us. I don't know. And then, I don't know, post a picture of sitting around in his underwear like Tom Brady did. I don't know, okay? The man's unpredictable. But Ray's got a lot of things going on. He's got his play, Tommy and Me, coming back for a 1 billionth run, which is great. It's going to be at the Bucks County Playhouse in May, I believe. And then in September, it's going to be at the Upstate Playhouse. Oh, I'm messing that up. But that's going to be coming in September. Bucks County Playhouse in May. That's the one I definitely know off the top of my head. And then Ray's also got a book signing coming up at the Barnes & Noble in Wilmington, Delaware at 3 o'clock on Saturday. So make sure you guys check out Ray at all those fine locations. But Ray breaks it all down for us, how he came out of retirement. He breaks down the Eagles Super Bowl, as one would assume. Gives his evaluation of Jalen Hurts, Nick Sirianni, and Jonathan Gannon for all you guys out there. So we'll get into that fine conversation. But I want to go back to last night. Because I found last night to be very interesting, very entertaining, and I thought the NFL really did a great job in presenting the whole thing. One of my favorite things from last night's media melee, opening night of the Super Bowl, was Jalen Hurts. And aside from anything with Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts has had a lot of haters going into this season. And if you're not haters, maybe doubters going into the season. And I have never seen this before. I've never seen a media member apologize for a take. I'll roll the clip first and foremost, and then I'll get my reaction to it. But just to set it up, in case you can't hear the person, the question was based on, it's not even a question. It was along the lines of, I didn't think you'd make it to a Super Bowl. I didn't think you'd lead this team to a Super Bowl. So man to man, I'm sorry. Okay? That's how that went down. Here's Jalen Hurts and this reporter.
Eagles would get to the Super Bowl with you as their quarterback.
You're not the only one.
Well, I just wanted to say, man to man, I'm sorry.
Cool.
What was the reporter going for there? Was he going for more along the lines of that? Yeah, you weren't the only one. I had a lot of doubters. And then, you know, you have Jalen Hurts expound upon that answer and talk about that more and more. What was he going for? Was he going for other reporters looking to be like, hey, you're a good guy. Hey, way to man up there. Like, I always believe that you should be able to say things to players' faces. Every time I've interviewed a player, and the guy I give the most credit for is our man, Avante Maddox, who, by the way, was not wearing a boot yesterday, just for a little reference there, was not wearing a boot. So hopefully he's good to go come Sunday. But Avante Maddox, I was interviewing him on the radio, interviewed him a couple of times, and in a radio setting, and he had a bad game against the Giants. Just he had a bad game against, there's no other way around it. He had a bad game against the Giants. It happens, all right? So I went through every play that he did not perform well on. And you know what he did? Like a man, he answered the question. Now, I had pointed out the plays before. I pointed out the plays while talking to him because I wanted to know what the heck had happened. And then I acknowledged. I was like, wow, you know what? Good for him answering questions like that. I believe if you're criticizing someone, you should be able to say that to them. If you're interviewing them, you should be able to have that conversation. When I would interview Brett Brown and his timeouts, I mean, we talk about clock management all the time in the NFL. Brett Brown's wasn't the best. I asked him about his timeouts, and he defended himself. I didn't think adequately. That doesn't mean I don't like the guy, but when it came to his usage of timeouts, it was a little skeptical. Rotations were certainly something I would ask him about. If you're going to be criticizing someone, at least be, I don't know, humble enough to ask the question. Well, okay, if you're not doing this, then why aren't you doing that? Let them explain. So I like the guy bringing it up that he had, that Jalen Hurts had a lot of doubters, that Jalen Hurts had a lot of people that didn't believe in him and all that stuff. But like, what was he going for at the end by saying, I'm sorry? Apologizing for a take, like a pretty straightforward, can a quarterback win a Super Bowl or not? Can a quarterback lead a team to a Super Bowl or not? Apologizing for a take like that, I think, is weak. I'm going to be flat out honest with you. You should never be embarrassed of your take. Maybe if you don't put a lot of thought into your take, maybe that would be embarrassing. But for this guy, I don't know what he was going for. Maybe he was trying to tee him up and have him, you know, keep on talking about, you know, how he had all the doubters in the world and all that. But on the other side of this, Jalen Hurts' answer was perfect. Like, what do you want me to do? Say, it's cool. It's cool now, man. We're friends. Don't worry about it. That kind of thing. I thought Jalen handled it perfectly. Yeah, you weren't the only one. You could hear him say that in the clip. You know, I didn't think you'd lead to him. Yeah, you weren't the only one. And then he says, I'm sorry. And then Jalen's just like, well, what do you want me to do with that? Cool. And then he moves on to the next question. Thought that was perfect. There were a lot of things that went on throughout last night's media night, opening night, right, that I just thought were cool. I thought the Kelce brothers being surprised by their mom who had cookies for them, which was amazing. That was great. I saw Jason Kelce being asked about his brother. And Jason Kelce goes on this long rant about how he's like, any bad juju that you want to send the way of a Kelce, make sure you send it to Travis and not me, okay? And he said it in jest, but like that was the attitude. And then they flip over to Travis Kelce. And Travis Kelsey's like, oh, I love my brother. My brother's amazing. He's so great. I wouldn't be who I am without my brother. And meanwhile, Jason's throwing all the shade in the world on his little brother. And Travis is like, I love him. We wouldn't be who I am without him, you know. Possible still root for him, but hope I win, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. And I was just like, that is such a brother dynamic. If you have a brother, you know, that's the deal right there. I just thought the two of them spoke so well, and Jason Kelce, every time he grabs a microphone, is just so damn captivating. He really is. You really feel like you're getting it all. And apparently we're not the only people that he's like that with. It's not just when he grabs a microphone and talks to us in the media or anybody like that, or talks to the fan base, but apparently when he's in the locker room, when he's in the classroom, when he's in the meeting rooms, right? That's how he is with his teammates. And this is fantastic. A lot of people, if you walk around Philadelphia with Jason Kelce, people will be fanboying out on Jason Kelce. Rightfully so. For a multitude of reasons. He's got the average Joe type of demeanor about him. He wants to, you know, win you a Super Bowl, and then he wants to serve you drinks down at Ocean Drive, okay? He is the everyman. If you get a chance to meet him, you get a chance to talk to him, meet his family, he is your next-door neighbor. He's the guy that you wouldn't be afraid to knock on the door and be like, hey, do you have that multi-tool that, can I borrow that? I just need to do, I have a quick project. I just got, right? Oh, yeah, sure, no problem. You want a beer? What? You know, that kind of thing. So, watching him last night, it did make me think about him as the teammate more so than I ever have, especially when I saw this clip of Jordan Mailata talking about Jason Kelce, because apparently we're not the only ones that will fanboy over Jason Kelce. Here's Jordan Mailata when he was asked about the impact of a guy like Jason Kelce in the locker room. Here's what Jordan Mailata had to say about his captain.
I mean, Jason Kelce is the epitome of a leader. I mean, let me clear these notifications. I got him as my screensaver, as Fat Batman. Yeah, that's how much of an inspiration he is to me, man. Just, it's an honor playing with Jason Kelce.
I have my wedding photo. Oh, yeah, let me clear my notifications, too. I have my wedding photo. You see that? I'm in the nice... Oh, you can't even see my wife because she blends in the background. Can we get a little closer there? See the missus? Da! Whatever. You get it. I do like that he had to clear his notifications. That's funny. But I got my wife, all right? A lot of people have their kids. That's beautiful. That's nice, right? He's got Fat Batman. Maybe a family member. Family was just in town. Maybe a picture of family. I think he's engaged. Maybe a picture of himself as the Masked Singer. Why not? Let's get a little conceited. I don't know. He's got his teammate on his phone as his background. I mean, that's in this modern society, that's high praise. That is high praise. I'm impressed. Color me impressed. You know who I'm not impressed with? Juju Smith-Schuster. I guess he's just trying to fire us up. I think he's trying to turn heel. Not even turn, but just be the heel. He's the enemy. as a receiver for the Chiefs. But last night, he was asked about cheesesteaks. I don't know. This is the kind of stuff you get at media night. You get the off-the-wall questions, okay? And he was asked about cheesesteaks. Juju Smith-Schuster showed up in Arizona, and he chose violence, ladies and gentlemen. He chose violence.
Honestly, I think the best Philly cheesesteaks are not in Philly, to be honest. Me? Huh? Definitely not Philly.
Shut up. All right, here's the deal. And this is a rule of thumb, and I'm proud. One person actually responded. I retweeted this. One person responded to it with the perfect adage. If on the menu, if you're at a place and you're looking at the menu, and on the menu it says Philly cheesesteaks, you do not order that item. If it says Philly cheesesteaks, you do not order that item because you are far enough away from Philadelphia where they have to specify that there's a certain type of cheesesteak. I'm going to just ruin your day right now, ladies and gentlemen. I am not kidding you when I tell you this. I am not messing with you. I'm not doing this on purpose to ruin your day, but I'm just telling you, I have to pass this along. The most horrible sight I've ever seen in 11 years traveling around with Sunday Night Football was going to the Cowboys Stadium, not the recent one, not AT&T Stadium, the old one, the one that smelled like a barn and urine. I was walking around that stadium, and I went up into the concessions. This was well before kickoff. No one was around except just workers cleaning up and getting things ready and all that stuff. And I couldn't believe I stopped and I stared at it. It was a little concession stand. It wasn't like a big one. It was like a cart, right? And I just stared at it, dumbfounded, because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Cowboy cheesesteaks. I'm going to say it one more time in case your brain just broke, okay? Cowboy cheesesteaks. And I went, this has to be something different. This has to be something weird. This, what is happening? And I looked at the menu, and I looked at the pictures, and they sold cheesesteaks similar to what you and I would know. I'm not going to say the same thing. I'm not going to do that. But they were making cheesesteaks in that stadium. And there's something about that felt so damn wrong. It felt horrendous. But I can guarantee you this. No way that was better than anything that we have here in Philadelphia. You go throughout the country. I've done it. I've taken a bite. You know what I do? I treat it like a lot of people of a similar culture to me won't eat other people's meatballs. And this would come up a lot. And I don't know why, but I think I lied about it. I'll totally eat somebody else's meatballs, but I only eat one. Just so I can go, yeah, ours are better. I do that. That's the snob in me. I'm not a snob about many things. Maybe just meatballs I'm a snob about. But I'll have just one. I'll be like, okay, they tried. But ours are better. My family's meatballs are better. So I've had cheesesteaks out and about. And plus, let's face it, folks, okay? It's melted cheese over meat on bread. I'm not saying no to many of those. Okay, those are welcome at all times. But I've had bites of other cheese, and they just can't get the bread right. They can't get the bread right. We get the best bread ever in this part of the world. It really is fantastic. It's so good. It's fantastic. I'm talking about for sandwiches and stuff like that. You just can't replicate it anywhere else in the country. You know what? Next time out in Colorado, there is a place called it's a Philly Connection, something like that. I'm going to go. They got a little cheesesteak shop in there, and I've been wanting to try it. I haven't had a lot of time when I've been out there to do so, but I got to give it a go. Just see how they do it. But I will tell you this. Nothing compares to the way we make a cheesesteak in this city. I mean, just think about the city in itself. All right? We got a million places to choose from when it comes to a good cheesesteak. When it comes to a great cheesesteak, that's a different ballpark right there. For me, I don't like the diced steak. I like a nice flat steak. I like a nice not diced steak. That's why I like a Tony Luke steak. And I got to have the sharp provolone cheese. Love the sharp provolone cheese. Jim's is good. Fan of Jim's. It is a diced steak. D'Alessandro's phenomenal, but a diced steak. I'm very particular. I like the sharp provolone. And I like the flat steak. I don't like the dice. I'll do the chewing. Thank you very much. But yeah, Juju Smith-Schuster woke up yesterday and chose violence. Public Enemy number like 7 when it comes to Philadelphia sports. So I'm not that worried about it. I did get an opportunity in perusing some of the stuff yesterday. The name Nick Foles popped out, and I was like, "Oh, this is what's Nicky Six up to here? What's Nick Foles up to?" And I saw this by way of John Clark of NBC Sports Philadelphia that Nick Foles wants to retire as a Philadelphia Eagle. When his playing days are done, Nick Foles wants to retire as a Philadelphia Eagle. Now, this might be like, well, of course, that's great, good. And yes, that is great, and it is good. I'm all on board for it. It's awesome. But I think there are players that should do this, and they don't for whatever reason. It's either not that important to them, or they already feel like Nick Foles already has a statue outside of Lincoln Financial Field of him. You know, I don't know how much of a need he feels to actually come back, sign a paper, and retire as an Eagle, one-day contract, whatever. But I think it's awesome. I think it's fantastic. That's exactly the way it should go down. And I know that Nick Foles has not exactly had a great run since that Super Bowl. But we kind of knew who Nick Foles was throughout his entire career. He was a guy that would have flashes. 27-2, the new system with Chip Kelly. 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, the new system with Chip Kelly, how great he was in that system, getting to the playoffs, being in position to win a playoff game, and then they lose to the Saints, unfortunately. A lot of things could have gone different with Nick Foles here. Ends up getting traded away a year later, played the following year, got hurt. Chris Baker of the Washington football team, let's just call him that. A lot of people fell in love with Jason Peters after he broke up Chris Baker, after he hit Nick Foles late, knocked him out. Mark Sanchez came close to taking it to the playoffs. Didn't work out, unfortunately. And then Nick Foles gets bounced around. He goes to St. Louis. Well, he goes to Los Angeles. Goes back to the Chiefs. And then he kind of like steadied himself with Kansas City. And then he comes to Philadelphia and wins a Super Bowl. Gets another opportunity in Jacksonville, doesn't work out. Gardner Minshew, just for whatever reason, flashes of greatness. But those flashes of greatness only happen here in Philadelphia. I mean, Super Bowl or not, you want to, I think, retire in the place that you played your best, and that's Philadelphia. You want to retire in the place that absolutely, without question, means the most to you in your career, and that's Philadelphia. Philadelphia drafted him. He won a Super Bowl here. There's the rest of the history lesson. But when it comes to Nick Foles coming back at all, I don't know if Gardner Minshew is going to be back next year. I don't know who your backup quarterback is next year. Are we past the point where we have to worry about what was once termed, I think it was Mike Missinelli that termed, the Folesian society? Because I would love to see Nick Foles back here in Philadelphia. And if he wants to retire as an Eagle, who says it has to be just that one-day contract? Who says it has to be sign the one-day deal and retire as an Eagle? Who says he can't come back and play? And by play, I mean actually be active on game day or be a third-string quarterback, you know? Because nobody's banging down the door right now for Nick Foles to be their starter. Of course not. No one's really banging down the door for Nick Foles to be their backup. But as a guy to just have back in Philadelphia, some people say he can't do it because all people are going to be screaming for Nick Foles if Jalen Hurts struggles. Jalen Hurts looks pretty damn good. I'm not that worried about Jalen Hurts. And I can understand to a point where people were worried about Carson Wentz because Carson Wentz proved that he wasn't as nearly as mentally tough as a guy like Jalen Hurts. I would welcome Nick Foles back, not just on a one-day deal to retire here. I'd welcome him back to be a backup quarterback. Now, when it comes to the fact that he hasn't played well, that's a factor. But for whatever reason, it's worked out in Philadelphia for Nick Foles. It's worked out here. Don't know why, something in the water, but it's worked out. My point is, with him being back in the news for wanting to retire as an Eagle, who says it has to just be a one-day deal? I'd welcome him back to be a backup here. Maybe not your immediate backup, maybe your third stringer, maybe to have your veteran on the roster, that type of thing. No, look, there's plenty of stories out there. Our friend Clay Harbor has told us many stories about Nick Foles and how he prepared every single week like he was going to start the game. Like some people just say that. Oh, you got to have the mentality that you're going to start even though you're not. Yeah, some people have that mentality. Some people like saying that, but then only few actually do it. And apparently Nick Foles is one of those guys. I'd welcome him with open arms. And the reason I say that is because I know there are people out there be like, oh, you can't do that because of the Folesian people. They would just want him to play. Nobody in their right mind wants Nick Foles to start over Jalen Hurts. Nobody. That's ridiculous. And I hate that I even have to say it out loud into a microphone. But there are people that would be like, well, you can't do that because you won a Super Bowl here. And what would that say with Jalen? Well, Jalen Hurts, I think, is about to win a Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts in his second year as a starter has already taken you to a Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts as a starter has already been an MVP candidate. I'm not worried about his backup quarterback. And you know what the best part about it is? Jalen Hurts isn't worried about his backup quarterback either. There's already stories, and I know Gardner Minshew isn't as the same lore that Nick Foles is, but remember the story before the season about Gardner Minshew? Hey, what do I got to do to be the starter around here, bro? Remember that story where he went to Nick Sirianni and he said, oh, I'm going to be the starter? And Nick's like, okay, you have to back off, okay? Those stories were already out there. You know who didn't give a damn about those stories? Jalen Hurts, and that's one of the things I love about him. So whether you're a reporter saying to him, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't really believe in you. Or you're someone who wants to bang the drum for Nick Foles to start at any point again in Philadelphia. Yeah, I don't think Jalen Hurts gives a damn. Jalen Hurts is busy working. And that's what I love about him. Oh, and then he's about to play in the Super Bowl. That's pretty cool as well. Let me talk about my man, Steven Singer. Steven Singer Jewelers, the other corner of 8th and Walnut, right there on Jewelers Row. Check out my man, Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers. The perfect price. Home of the perfect price each and every day online at IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get to the man himself. The great Ray Dinninger joins the Farzee Show today. Here is all Ray had to tell us about your Philadelphia Eagles team.
Now the Rothman Orthopedics guest line. Quite frankly, the best to ever do it. Hall of Fame sports writer. All around amazing guy. Playwright, analyst on TV, radio, contributor, back with WIP, back with NBC Sports Philadelphia for this amazing Eagles run. The man does it all, the great Ray Dinninger. Ray, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, Mark. Great to be with you again.
Oh, I left out the 48 Emmys? How many Emmys? What do we got here? What do we got there behind you?
Six.
Oh, there we go. A modest six, right. But no, I want to say this because I just learned this is incredible. Your play, Tommy and Me, which I've seen a couple of times. It's fantastic. I recommend it for everybody. You just found out you guys are going to be putting it back on Bucks County Playhouse in May and also the Uptown Theater in September as well. You guys are just like you're printing copies of your book. You're just, putting this play on every stage, my friend. This is incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. When you consider that we debuted Tommy and Me in 2016 and that here we are 2023 and it's still going, and theaters still want it. It's great. It really is great. And we did Bucks County Playhouse last year and had a great run up there in New Hope. It's a wonderful theater. God, it's a great theater right there on the river. In the springtime, it's a beautiful place. And so they wanted us to come in May 17th to June 11th. So it's a nice long run. And then the Uptown Theater in Westchester, right on High Street there. We had been in conversation. In fact, we were supposed to do the play there in 2020. And then, of course, the pandemic came and every theater's all shut down. So we've been trying to put it back together again ever since. So they decided this year to bring it into their schedule, which coincides beautifully with the start of the next football season. So we're really excited. So May at the Bucks County Playhouse and September at the Uptown in Westchester. I hope folks come out and support it.
I'm sure they will. I mean, as they have been for this play, and you did such a wonderful job writing it, and the actors do such a great job portraying the story. I do recommend it for not just every Eagles fan, but just every fan of going to the live theater. It really does check every box when it comes to just watching a great performance there. And then I understand you also have a book signing coming up Saturday before the Super Bowl. You're going to be in Wilmington, right? Wilmington, right. Delaware?
Yeah, there you go. Now, the Barnes & Noble on Concord Pike, right there, Route 202. We're going to be there. I'll be there on Saturday, day before the game, 3 to 5, signing copies of Finished Business and the Eagles Encyclopedia, which, by the way, if the Eagles win on Sunday, we'll be doing a whole new edition of Eagles Encyclopedia coming to bookshelves near you next September. So I will once again, Mark, I'll be back on deadline on Monday morning.
You can't not have a deadline. Now, I know a lot of people made a big deal. Oh, he's back from retirement. I'm just so glad, as I've joked with you, I'm so glad it's not a full Carson where you just disappeared. Like Johnny Carson was this guy we saw all the time, and then he just went away. You're still very much around. You're going to be printing another copy of Eagles Encyclopedia, as you mentioned, book signings, plays, and then, of course, just bringing your Eagles analysis to our screens and our ears and print as well. So just during the time you stepped away out of the limelight for a while, you know, what jumped out to you about that life, being able to sit back, watch an Eagles game for the first time in a very long time?
That was a big part of it. It was actually on Eagle Sunday, just sitting on the couch like everybody else, just watching the game and enjoying it. Now, I had my yellow legal notepad with me the whole time. I took my notes. I logged the game. I charted the plays just like I always did, because at this point, I can't watch a football game and not do that. It's just so, after 53 years, I just can't. So I was doing that, but, you know, it was kind of nice that when the game was over, win or lose, I could just kind of hit the remote and go to something else, you know, just get up and go in the kitchen and have dinner with my wife or something. That was nice. That really was. But as the season rolled along and the wins just kept piling up, It was my wife, actually, Maria, who said, I forget what it was. They were 7-0, 8-0, whatever. And she said, you know, they're going to be calling you. And I said, who? The TV and the radio station. They're going to want you to come back. I said, nah, you know, they've kind of moved on. I don't think so. Like the next day, Michael Barkhead calls and says, hey, listen, you know, we all know they're going to the playoffs. You know, and come January, it's going to be wall-to-wall Eagles. Would you be willing to come back and be part of our postseason coverage? So, you know, I talked it over with my wife. I mean, I didn't want to wind up next to Tom Brady in divorce court. So we talked it over. She said, look, I saw this coming. You know, it's no big thing. I mean, you know, how often do they go to the Super Bowl? So she signed off on it. And so I told NBC, okay, I'll come back. And then right after that, WIP checked in and they asked if I would do it. And you know, I mean, these seasons like this don't come along all the time. So the opportunity to get back in and have my say, yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Is it true the Bulletin also called you? Just I wouldn't mind. Just write a couple of stories for the old Bullet, just please. Okay. it is wild because I'm sure after the amount of time that you've put into it, which is a very long time, sitting there on the sofa, I saw the special that was run with you and your son, Dave. Yeah. What an incredible thing to first off witness the person that is Ray Dinninger, not just the writer slash analyst, just seeing that moment at the Super Bowl 5 years ago and then being able to see you guys actually kick back and share a game together.
That was great fun. We had, they make a point of it in the show. And it's true. People think, oh, they just said that, or they just did that for effect. The idea that we had never watched, David and I had never watched an Eagles game together, and he's 49 years old. But it's true. I mean, we never did because I was always working. I was always either in the press box or in the studio. So we never had that opportunity to, you know, do what fathers and sons do on a typical Sunday, sit on the couch, watch the Eagles game. So this year, in my new role, when the Eagles opened the season in Detroit, David was coming back. He had been shooting. He shot the whole Thursday night package for Amazon this year. So he worked every Thursday night game. And he also shot Notre Dame on Saturdays. So he had shot the Thursday night game, the first game. Then he shot Notre Dame on Saturday and then flew into Philly on Monday and came straight here. And we were able to actually watch the Eagles-Lions game together. And it was really a lot of fun. NFL Films was here to film the whole thing. And that was a big part of the Presents piece. And it was really fun. It was really, really good. After the whole thing was done, when I sat back and watched it, I said, I never knew my son was such a great interview. It was really a lot. So many people who saw the show said, they said three things. They said, number one, that's a great bulldog you have, the one that was chewing his toy. Number two is, where did WIP get that cake for your going away party? The one that they made in the shape of a giant yellow legal cat. And then the other one was, I had no idea your son was such a great interview, to which I said, neither did I. It was really good. And the guys at NFL Films did, as always, they did a great job with it.
Dave definitely has a personality on him. I have had many great conversations with Dave about some pretty interesting stuff. So yeah, he definitely, he's an entertainer. I'll say that as well. I want to go back to this, Ray, because you talked about the Eagles and stacking wins as they had this season. I asked this of a lot of my guests, this, especially towards the end of the season. When did you realize this season was going to be special? In 2017, we had the amazing field goal by Jake Elliott. It was amazing. Right. And then this year, it was kind of like they just kept stacking wins. Was there a moment, though, that you would look at it this season that would be at all comparable to what Jake Elliott did during the 2017 run? A moment that stuck out that said, wow, this could be the real deal?
Not quite like Jake Elliott, because that was really – you know, it's the longest field goal in the history of the franchise, overtime, all that stuff. I mean, that was really you had a feeling right at that moment that something special was going on. There was nothing as singularly dramatic as that. But I felt the Minnesota game week two, when, you know, I knew Minnesota was pretty good. I didn't think they were great, but I thought they were pretty good. And the Eagles just took them apart, you know, I mean, and made it look easy. And that's when I said, wow, this team might be really good. I mean, Hurts came out, you know, primetime game, a lot of, you know, home opener, a lot riding on it. And, he came out, and against a good quality team, a playoff team, I mean, he just was in total command. And I thought, you know, going into the season, my prediction was I thought they'd win 11 and win the East. But that night, after watching the way they handled the Vikings, I started thinking, you know, they might be better than that, you know. But I thought all along they'd be a playoff team. I mean, I really did. I thought, you know, in year two, I expected Sirianni to be better. You know, in year two as a starter, I expected Hurts to be better. I thought Howie Roseman did a great job bringing in guys in the offseason. I thought he had some really good signings. I liked their draft. I mean, I thought the roster was much better than it was than the team in Tampa that lost in Tampa. But it was after the Minnesota game, I thought, you know, this team, they really have a chance, you know, because I didn't think there was a super team in the NFC. You know, I kind of thought the NFC had some good teams, but I didn't see like some super, super powerful team that was going to dominate. I thought it was going to be a year when just, you know, a good team could win it. Didn't have to be a great team, but a good team. And I began to think in week two that the Eagles might just be that team.
I think for me, yeah, it was around that same time when you saw how good the defense could play. And when they did what they did to Justin Jefferson and Kirk Cousins in that game, it definitely showed you that defense was also going to be special. As far as the quarterback goes, Jalen Hurts, the last time we spoke, you know, talking about, is he the guy? Is he going to be the franchise guy going forward? Will the Eagles be trading or trying to acquire a different quarterback? And then he has this incredible season that nobody saw coming. MVP caliber play, maybe second runner up to the guy that's actually going to be the MVP and the guy is facing in the Super Bowl and Patrick Mahomes. But when you think about leaps forward in a career from one year to another, I mean, this has to be comparable to the best, if not the best, in the time you've been covering the Eagles.
Yeah, probably so. It was a pretty dramatic leap, but I think that I was, you and I may have even had this conversation, because you're right. I mean, the whole offseason, the whole conversation was, you know, is he the guy? Should we go with him? There was a large number of people that wanted to make a big trade, take all the draft picks, trade them for Russell Wilson or trade them for Deshaun Watson or pursue Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there was a lot of that talk out there. And I was pretty consistent in saying, no, I wouldn't do that. You know, because I thought Hurts last year showed me a lot. I mean, when he played, I mean, it's his first year as a starter, and he did take you to the playoffs and kind of got that season back on track and, you know, won the division, got you to the playoffs. And I just thought, you know, this kid's pretty good. And if you just watch the way he improved from year to year, I mean, from Alabama to Oklahoma to year one here to year two, I mean, you could definitely see the track that he was getting better. And as good as he was last year, I said, you know, he very well may come back next year even better than this. And if that's the case, you might not have to make a trade. You might have your quarterback right here. So I was all in favor of giving him another year. Just let's just see what he can do. Just give him another year. And look, if he plateaus or takes a step back, you know, then we can start talking about drafting another quarterback or whatever. But let's give Jalen Hurts a chance to show us what he can really do. And boy, did he ever. I mean, at least I saw it even in training camp and a preseason. You just saw he just looked better. I mean, he had put in a lot of work at the passing school out on the West Coast. His mechanics were much better. His footwork was much better. His release, his accuracy, all of that. And the other part of it was he just working with Sirianni for a year, he just saw the field so much better. I mean, there were days of training camp where the ball never hit the ground. I mean, everything was just on the money and on time. And that's when you saw, or at least I felt, you know, this kid is making real progress and he's going to be better this year than he was last year. Now, was I thinking he could be an MVP? No, but I certainly saw a guy this summer that was much improved over last year. And clearly the guy that was going to lead this team.
You know, he didn't obviously start out well here in Philadelphia in terms of the draft pick, and nobody wanted a quarterback in the second round. They wanted somebody to help out Carson Wentz, who was just signed to that huge deal, right? And we know how that worked out. But Nick Sirianni didn't start out well here as well. We pay maybe sometimes a little too much attention to press conferences. He didn't get introduced in the most confident light here in Philly. And now, not only did he go to the Super Bowl or go to the playoffs his first season as a rookie head coach, he's now in the Super Bowl. You mentioned earlier that Nick Sirianni was a guy you thought would improve in his second year. How much do you think Nick Sirianni has improved in his second year as a head coach?
Considerably. But, I mean, we began to see it even midseason last year when they were 2-5, and it really looked like the whole thing might fall apart. I mean, they looked that bad in a couple of those games. But Sirianni showed me something when he reversed course and said, you know what, this isn't working. We got to try something else. It's a very hard thing for coaches to admit that, this isn't right. What my whole plan here, no, this isn't right. We got to do something different. Boy, coaches, even older veteran coaches are reluctant to acknowledge that. For a young coach, a rookie head coach in a tough town like this to at 2-5, just all of a sudden take a step back and say, wow, no, this, we got to try something different here. And then just do the most obvious thing, which is coaches are so reluctant to do this. But when you're in crisis mode, the simplest thing to do is say, wait a minute, what are my strengths? What's the best part of my team? You know, what do I have the most confidence in? It was his offensive line for sure. And he said, you know what, if we're going to get out of this, let's go with our best guys. And he just put it on the offensive line and said, we're going to start running the ball and we're going to count on you guys to win the battle at the line of scrimmage. And that's how they got the season back on track. And second half of the year, they were a totally different team. And everybody talks about have the players bought into the coach. Well, they clearly bought in then, because I think the players respect the fact that, you know, this was tough for this guy to admit that we were going down the wrong path here. And I give him a lot of credit for saying, no, we're going to change. We're going to come back and go to something else and have it work the way that it did. And this year, he's just continued to grow into it. And his personality is certainly different. I mean, I can't remember seeing an Eagles coach quite like this guy. Some of the sideline stuff and, you know, the occasional mugging to the camera. And that wasn't exactly, I don't think I ever called Dick Vermeil doing that. But the fact is he's, the best word to describe is he's authentic. He's himself. You know, he's not putting on an act. He's not trying to be somebody else. He's himself, you know, and I think that's the biggest mistake that coaches, first-time coaches can make is to try and be somebody else that they work for. You know, some of Belichick's assistants have failed when they became head coaches because they all tried to be Belichick. And there's only one of those. And none of Lombardi's assistants ever succeeded. They all got chances because they were Lombardi's assistants, but they all tried to be Lombardi. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you have to be yourself. And Nick is 100% himself. And he's funny. but he's smart and he's intense. And look at where he's got this team. You know, year two, he's got him playing for the championship.
Mm-hmm. Before I jump into that Super Bowl, I do want to just real quick, the criticism that Jonathan Gannon gets, both seasons, top 10 defense, this season, obviously a huge leap forward with sacks and turnovers and that whole thing. Does he deserve most of the criticism, all the criticism, not nearly as much criticism? When you look at Jonathan Gannon, what type of defensive coordinator, how good do you think he is?
I think he's good. I think that he's been criticized too much. I think he's people are too quick to criticize. And I think it's more a philosophical issue. I mean, he has one way of doing things. I mean, he's a defensive coach who's going to play pretty conservative defense, and he's going to play two deep safeties. He's not going to blitz very much. And his whole philosophy is we're not giving up the big play. We're not giving up the home run ball. You know, people can nickel and dime a little bit, but we're going to make them work their way up the field and trust that somewhere along the line, we're going to come up with a stop or a play. That's his philosophy. It's a little conservative, but it's certainly successful. The numbers would bear that out. The problem is that you have a Philadelphia fan base that has a high degree of bloodlust. You know, and you can trace it back to Buddy Ryan. You know, I mean, Buddy Ryan and Jonathan Gannon are on polar opposites in terms of their defensive philosophy. And they were both successful at it. But a lot of the fans here just loved the Buddy Ryan, let's go rip their head off style of defense. You're blitzing on every play. Everybody's coming. And it certainly worked to a point, you know, but Buddy never won a playoff game here. With Jonathan Gannon, they're playing in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, you know, Stan Hockman used to have an expression, different horses for different courses. And I think that, I think Buddy was right for that time and for that group of players. And certainly Seth Joyner reflects that every time he opens his mouth. He reflects that. But now, yes, he does. You know, we're years later. It's a different era of pro football. And you have a defensive coordinator here who coaches a different way. But if you just look at the numbers, hard to argue against it. I mean, number one against the pass, 70 sacks. They've now added 8 more in the postseason. I mean, they're really good. And I think that, you know, there's some times that you get in games where the other team, you know, they dink and they dunk and they move the ball up the field and the quarterback's standing there and he's got a lot of time and fans just get frustrated. But the overall philosophy, I kind of get it. And I think this year with the better personnel that he has, he's got a defensive line now that they can win all those battles there. And so you don't have to blitz a lot to get good pressure when you have defensive line as good as this one. And that's sort of what he's had going for him this year. And it's been obviously tremendously successful.
I've had some conversations with people out in the street. I've had some conversations with people in our chat here on the show, and we're all pretty confident in the Eagles going up against the Chiefs. I don't think anyone has it as a blowout. I don't think anyone has the Eagles running up the score or anything like that, but a lot of people are confident and they're almost like sheepishly confident. If I know that's an oxymoron, but it's like, you know, you're facing Mahomes, you know, you're facing a lot of experience with that Chiefs team. Are we crazy, right, to look at this and go, wow, the Eagles should win this. The Eagles are the better team. Are we crazy to have that feeling?
No. I think the Eagles are better. I think that's fair to say. I will say I kind of agree with your basic point is that maybe people shouldn't be too confident. You know, I think because I have had people, and somebody just 15 minutes ago say, you thought the Eagles were going to blow them out. Now, I'm not going there. But I think they're better, and I think they should win the game. It is funny to see the Philadelphia fan base this confident about a game of this magnitude. Because typically, Eagles fans go through life sort of like this, you know.
Yeah, forcing themselves to watch, sure.
Yeah. Is it over yet? Can you make the field goal? I can't look, you know. That is the more typical posture of the Philadelphia fan. To be sitting here early in Super Bowl week and saying, oh, yeah, we got this one in the bag, That's a little odd for this town, but I think it kind of reflects the feeling that people have. It doesn't mean that they don't respect the Chiefs or Andy or Mahomes. Certainly they should. They should respect them. But I think it's just sort of the confidence that they have in this team. They've seen them all year. And I really do think they're the best team in the league. I think they are the best team in the league. And people have bought into that idea.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the quarterbacks, obviously Mahomes has that leg up. But it's like if you're looking at this year isolated, Jalen Hurts has been right there with them pound for pound. So the confidence level in the quarterback situation, the quarterback matchup, excuse me, has a lot of people riding high into this game as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think that and everybody will be doing the matchups, you know, matching up the quarterbacks, matching up the offensive line, who has the edge here, who has the edge there. And in fairness, when people say quarterback, yeah, you would give the edge to Mahomes. I mean, you have to. I mean, mm-hmm. Mahomes right now, he's the best player in the NFL, I think. You would give him the edge, but the difference between the two of them isn't like this, you know. I'd give him the edge over Hurts, but it's competitive. I mean, Hurts is right there, and you know, you got two guys that are both certainly in the MVP conversation. And you know, I was having a discussion actually with a guy from Kansas City this week, and he was saying, you know, it was a shame that Hurts got injured, because if he hadn't gotten injured, missed those two games, he might have won the MVP, you know. But, you know, I missed those two games. And so I view it totally differently. I said, I think the two games he missed further proved how valuable he was to this team. I
mean,
absolutely. You watch the Eagles the rest of this year when they had Hurts a quarterback, and then the two games with Minshew, you look at the difference between those two teams. If you go by the strictest definition of who is most valuable to his team, I think those two games prove to you how valuable Jalen Hurts is to the Eagles. Not that Mahomes isn't valuable to the Chiefs. Clearly he is. But I thought people say, oh, he missed those two games, so that's why he can't win. I argue the other thing. I think those two games prove why he should win. Because he's, he's played remarkably well. Even though I thought he was going to have a really good year, and after seeing him at training camp, I was really sure he was going to have a good year if he didn't get hurt. He has exceeded my expectations. I mean, I didn't think that statistically he would be in a place where he is for passes over 25 yards. He's the highest rated quarterback in the NFL. And at the beginning of this year, all anybody said was, I don't know if he has enough arm. You know, I don't know if he can throw the long ball. Mm-hmm. Fact of the matter is, statistically, he threw the long ball better than any quarterback in the league this year. So, I mean, who saw that coming other than maybe Nick Sirianni?
I do want to ask you two more real quick, Ray. When it comes to the edge, like where the Eagles have the edge in this game far and away, obviously it's not at the quarterback spot. Where do you think they do have the edge? Like they have to be successful in doing this if they're going to win this game.
Well, two different questions. Where they have the edge is the offensive line. I mean, their offensive line against Kansas City's front seven is a significant advantage for the Eagles, I think. You saw what their offensive line did to the Giants' front seven. And I look at the Giants' front seven as not that different than the Chiefs, to be honest. I mean, they have one really good defensive lineman, the Chiefs do, in Chris Jones. But the Giants had Dexter Lawrence, who was, you know, a guy who's legit Pro Bowler this year and having a great season, and had just come from just absolutely crushing Minnesota the week before. And in that game against the Eagles, I mean, the offensive line made him invisible, you know. And so if a team really only has one stud player on their defensive line, this offensive line can take that guy out of the game. So as good as Chris Jones is, and he's very good, you know, I think the Eagles will keep him from wrecking the game. So the Eagles offensive line really kind of is the key to all of it, I think. But when you're saying what's the one thing, like if the Eagles do this.
Right.
And, you know, finish this sentence. If the Eagles do, they'll win. Don't turn the ball over. You know, I mean, the regular season, they were 7-0 in games when they didn't turn it over. Postseason, the 2-0, not turning it over. That's really what it is. I don't think, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I don't think the Chiefs' defense is good enough to stop the Eagles' offense. But the Eagles could stop themselves by throwing interceptions or fumbling or whatever. They could do that. Mm. But if they just don't do that, if they don't turn the ball over, yeah, I think they'll move the ball. I think they'll score. I think they win.
All right. I like it. I know you're expecting the win. How specific? At the time we tape this, it's Monday afternoon. How specific can we get right now with a prediction from the great Ray Didinger?
This game could go a couple different ways. I mean, you look at – these are two of the highest scoring teams in the league, and the over-under sort of reflects that. It's pretty high. I would probably pick a fairly high score. I would probably say like 31-24. But if the Eagles take an approach, which wouldn't be the worst thing, to come out and just play time of possession game and just long drives with the idea being – we're just going to keep that offense off the field. We're going to keep Mahomes and Kelce off the field, and we're going to, and they can, they could do that. It's kind of the way the Giants won their Super Bowl over the Patriots when the Patriots were the highest scoring team of all time, Brady, Randy Moss, all that stuff. The Giants just controlled the clock. I mean, the Giants first possession in that game, they had the ball for 10 minutes and that was their philosophy. We're just going to win time of possession and keep those guys off the field. If the Eagles do that, I think it's a pretty smart strategy, and that would bring the score down. Mm-hmm. Like that Patriot Giants game, neither team scored 20. So it could be like that if it becomes a time of possession game. But there's so many playmakers here that I kind of think it won't be that, and they're just going to hit some big plays just because those guys are good enough. So I'm going to say 31-24, but I do see the Eagles winning.
Love it. I'm right in the same ballpark as you, my friend. Ray, thank you for being so generous with your time, not just with me now, but obviously with the great people at WIP, with the great people at NBC Sports Philly, and also going to Barnes & Noble this Saturday. You're going to be there at 3 o'clock in Wilmington, signing copies of your book, as well as Tommy and me coming back to the stage in May at the Bucks County Playhouse, and then in September at the Uptown Theater as well. Make sure you guys check out Bucks County Playhouse and Uptown Theater to get your tickets. Tickets available right now, Ray?
They are indeed.
Look at that. Sold out before we know it. Sold out before we know it. I know it. Ray, thanks so much. Great catching up with you. I hope you get to enjoy the game as well. Always appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Always great to be with you, Mark. Thanks a million.
The great Ray Didinger joining us on the Rothman Orthopedics Guest Line. I mean, there's just, he's the best. He is the champion of Eagles analysis, without question. And just like the best guy you'll ever meet. Love Ray Didinger. I'm going to jump right into the chat check today, ladies and gentlemen. See how you guys are doing today. Sean Gillespie, what's going on? Kevin, what's popping? Mike Fuji. And by the way, just for Ray's score, I'm trending more in that direction. I think the Eagles break 30. I'm starting to go that direction a little bit. Mike Fuji, what's going on? Thanks for having me on last night with you and the boys. That was a good time. Does McNabb or Reed deserve blame? That's a great question, Random Anton, and I know that's something that's going to be debated for all of time as to why they didn't win. I mean, when you actually look at being on the highest stage, I blame McNabb in the Super Bowl more than I blame Reed in that Super Bowl. But for his power over player personnel, I blame Reed a lot more, because Donovan, here's the thing, like before the Donovan and T.O. was kind of the split. It was like 2005 when they literally split, when T.O. got sent home and all that stuff happened. That was literally the split. But that was like also the dividing point of Donovan. The love and hate relationship people had with Donovan, because Donovan was like on this great trajectory. He was leading the team to the playoffs. He looked like he was going to be this great quarterback in terms of a guy. And like, he's a borderline Hall of Famer. You go by the numbers of his era. And for like 10 years, he was a top five, top seven quarterback in the NFL. But when it came to not surrounding him with enough talent, that's where I look at Reed. That's where I look at the front office in general that did Donovan dirty during those, I would say like the first 5-6 years of Donovan's career here in Philly, before he got T.O. So really, I guess it would be 4 to 99, you know, about 5-4 years. And then after that, it was like, I felt like Donovan, the whole T.O. situation really explained that Donovan wanted to not only win, but he needed to be the guy to win. He couldn't have like a bigger star on the team kind of what I learned about him. But one thing's for damn sure, that defense was always stacked. That defense was always great. If you go by points, even the TO year, the defense always outranked the offense. Jim Johnson's defense always outranked in terms of points allowed or points forced per game. They always outranked. They were always better than the Eagles' offense. Fun little tidbit. Tom Brady pick looks like the machinist. It's a creepy picture. It's a creepy picture. I don't need to show it. You guys have probably seen it. No, thank you. True Savage, good morning. Random Anton, Sean, April. If you haven't already, listen to the newest episode of the Kelce Brothers podcast. They interview the parents. It's hilarious. I actually listened to their podcast more than I ever have when I was driving around with the move and everything. And I was like, you know, let me try to get a full episode in, because usually I just catch up with them and the guest. I, you know, you could call me biased, but I think Jason is 1,000 times better than Travis. 1,000 times better. Random Anton never doubted Jalen, but I was in the let's give him another year. That's where I was as well. Meet in the middle, a lot of doubters. I can understand that. Juju was the only good. Oh, Juju was only good next to Antonio Brown. Fair point. Playing opposite side of him in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Sean Gillespie, Philly cheesesteaks down south 30 years ago made me almost go Hulk crazy. Clay, what's going on, Clay? You good luck charm and not watching the team, you. Random. I'm also not a Cheese Whiz guy. I do not enjoy the Cheese Whiz. Provolone, sharp provolone. That's where I'm going. PJ with the ketchup. Here's my rule on ketchup and cheesesteaks. The cheesesteak has to be a day old. Like, I have to have had a cheesesteak and a half the previous day and then put the rest in the fridge. No mustard. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm here for that. SB Ricky. What's up, SB Ricky? What's going on? Morning, Farzy. Oh, cheesesteaks in Greenville. Okay. Wicked One. What's up, Wicked One? Morning, Farzy. Go Birds. I truly believe we can win this game. Ray made so many good points. I figure we would be too much for the Chiefs defense. All we have to do is just hold the Chiefs offense. I agree. And you got the defense just for that. April, Jason is definitely better than Travis on the podcast. No question. Okay, good. It's not just me. Thanks, everybody, in the chat. You guys are great as per usual. Sixers back at it tomorrow night. 7:30 tip off in Boston. They'll be back in action. NBA trade deadline will be tomorrow. I'm going to try to get us a guest that could do both. Get a guest that could do both. Talk a little NBA trade deadline. Excuse me, it's Thursday. Talk a little NBA trade deadline. And then also talk Super Bowl, which would be nice, wouldn't it? Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is the Farzy Show presented by Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Take it easy.